This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Sky Pass Entertainment's new movie, The Least of These, The Graham Stain Story. The Least of These, rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13, in theaters February 1st. More information is available at theleastofthese.movie.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
Thank you so much for joining us. Again, while the clock is ticking on this world, there's no doubt about that. As Romans 13 puts it, yes, it is now time for you to wake up from your sleep. Our salvation is nearer now than when we first believed. And that's also true about the return of Jesus Christ. 2 Peter 3 tells us the Lord is not slow about his promise, as some count slowness, but is patient towards you, not wishing for any to perish, but for all to come to repentance. But the day of the Lord will come like a thief, in which the heavens will pass away with a roar, and the elements will be destroyed with intense heat, and the earth and its works will be burned up. What are some of the clues leading up to today that point us to the countdown of Christ's return and God's coming judgment? We're going to tackle that today with Terry. He's an author and general editor and co-author of many books on Bible prophecy. You can read him at raptureready.com, and his latest book is called Essays in Apocalypse, Some Thoughts on the End of Days. Terry, so great to have you here. How are you?
I'm fine, Jen, and thank you very much for inviting me, and how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much, and I'm happy because I want the Lord to return, although we are in some very precarious days in many ways, aren't we?
Well, that's exactly what was prophesied for the very end of the age, and I believe that's exactly where we are, as you correctly pointed out.
Well, for sure. So let's talk a little bit, because you say the signals of Christ's return are converging at a phenomenal pace. And I would want to ask, what are some of the signals that you're seeing today that are maybe new and something we haven't been seeing much of in years past, but now are giving us a clue that Christ's return could be imminent?
Well, I think one of the big things is, of course, Israel is always at the center of end-time prophecy, and the fact that, President Trump has seen fit to recognize Israel officially and move the American embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem is a very big factor, and I think that puts us right in line with Jesus' words about the fig tree, the generation that sees the fig tree develop and so forth, and in the end of days situation.
Yes.
That generation will see his return. And I personally know some of the seminaries see that differently, but I personally, in my study, believe that Israel being at the center of everything, and I believe it is the fig tree that is beginning to put forth its leaves in a mighty way, and this president has been a part of that. I believe that's God's doing. I think the miraculous things we saw in the turn of election events and everything shows that God's hand is in this thing. And so I think that Israel being at the center is the main thing. Now, we see all these other end-time, perilous times things that Paul pointed out in 2 Timothy chapter 3, some of the things are just unbelievably coming into clarity as far as I'm concerned. We see people are traitorous, heady. In other words, they know more than the general public do, and they lord it over people. Hmm. I think these characteristics are very strong, not to mention the fact that Paul talked about that without natural affection.
Yes.
And of course, abortion, nothing is more in the category of unnatural affection than a mother being willing to abort her baby, as far as I'm concerned. And then the other part of without natural affection is all of these things we see taking place in the homosexual community. I know that's not a popular thing to say, but I'll say it.
Yep, it's true.
I believe these things all point to the convergence that we see happening.
Right. Oh, I agree with you on all of it. You were referencing the parable of the fig tree in Matthew 24. This is the chapter where we have the Olivet Discourse that the Lord delivered. And I'm going to it, starting in verse 32, where it says, "Now learn the parable from the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and puts forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. So you too, when you see all these things, recognize that he is near right at the door." And then he goes on to say, "Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place." And what's interesting, when you mention Israel and you refer to the fig tree reference here that the Lord gives to us, was it significant in terms of Bible prophecy that the embassy itself was moved from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem? And in other words, we don't have specific references in Scripture to the United States, obviously, although we can get into that discussion of Babylon and so forth. But do you see that particular move as fulfilling some form of Bible prophecy? In other words, where is Israel?
Do.
Yeah, where is Israel right now on
Zechariah
the timeline?
Chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. What this does, I think, is put Israel even more in the crosshairs of the entire world, the globalist view of the world, of the so-called international community. It puts Israel right in the bullseye of Zechariah chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. So that Israel will become and Jerusalem will become a burdensome stone and a cup of trembling to the whole world. I think this is one move that has definitely put Israel in that target area, Zechariah the prophet talked about.
Right. No, that is a very important passage for people to consider. So you've mentioned Israel obviously takes center stage, always has to. And then you just made a reference to globalism, and you've said that these are two important factors to understanding key biblical prophecies. What of globalism? Because now that we've had the election of President Donald Trump, he's sort of bashed globalism for the moment, at least. We've had a reprieve on the globalism advancement by Barack Obama. But how do you see globalism right now in terms of its threat to the United States and its threat and how it applies in Bible prophecy? Where are we now on the globalism front?
Gosh, I wish we had 2 hours here. we're limited here by time. I could talk on this all day and all night. Globalism is the mindset that Satan has put into the world community that says that, we will rule. God does not rule. We rule. And Psalm chapter 2. Says they set themselves in array against me, God says, and they say, we'll not have anybody rule over us. Let us break their bands asunder, meaning the heavenly bands asunder. And it's an old back to Babel thing where they wanted to build a tower that would reach into heaven, Genesis chapter 11.
Right.
And it's the same thing. Back to Babel. Satan's using the same ploy he always has. That's why when the globalist agenda was so drastically interrupted and miraculously so, I think, in November of 2016 with the presidential election. That's why we have seen from that point forward such a literally frothing at the mouth rage from not only, Satan's demonic minions, but from his human minions who are bent on bringing globalism to bear. This is what Satan wants to do, is establish his Antichrist kingdom, and this is the platform he wants to use to do it. And he knows that he knows Bible prophecy probably better than anybody. He doesn't accept the outcome. He's so deluded from his reprobate thinking, having turned from the God who created him, that he still thinks he can win. That's what reprobate mindset does to you, and that's what it's done to all of these people who have come down so hard on this Trump administration. And no matter what he does, and everything has been for the good of America, in my view. Most everything he's done has been, and yet they look at it, everything, as exactly upside down from the way I see it, anyway. And that shows that we're in a time of reprobate thinking, as Paul said in Romans chapter 1. And when you turn away from God, you turn your thoughts away from God, when you say things like, marriage can be a man and a man and a man with a man and a man with and a woman with a woman. It does not have to be the way God prescribed it, marriage between a man and a woman. That's reprobate, upside down thinking. When you get to the point where you can say that a baby can be aborted, can be killed, but we've got to spare the snail daughter. We have to spare the spotted owl. We have to make sure the woods, the forests aren't cut.
Yes, yes, exactly. Oh man, we have to pause for a quick break. We'll come back with Terry James. His book is Essays in Apocalypse. Stay with us on Janet Mefford Today. What would happen if conservative evangelical churches began to embrace queer theology? Do we really want to find out? Join me, Janet Mefford, at the upcoming God's Voice Conference, February 22nd and 23rd in Oklahoma City. Find out how sexual radicals are working to undermine sound doctrine in our churches and how to stand on God's word at this critical time. Come stand with us at the God's Voice Conference. Register now at godsvoice.us. That's godsvoice.us. We'll see you there.
From Sky Pass Entertainment comes The Least of These, The Graham Stain Story. When speculation mounts that a local missionary is converting locals to Christianity in India, a journalist must choose between his own ambition and the truth.
You can't make any mistakes. They have this law for a reason.
I know. We must pray.
Based on the true story, The Least of These, The Graham Stain Story, rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13. In theaters February 1st, more information is available at theleastofthese.movie.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to your health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? Well, we're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you will access health care so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $199 a month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com and regain control over your healthcare costs. 855-585-4237 or lightyourliberty.com. Together, we're changing healthcare for good. We are back on Janet Mefford Today, and we were talking a little bit about Psalm 2 a few minutes ago with Terry James. He's with us, a Bible prophecy expert. You can find him at raptureready.com, and his book is called Essays in Apocalypse. And we were talking a little bit about globalism, Terry. When you reference Psalm 2, one of my favorite verses in Psalm 2, when it talks about why are the nations in an uproar and the peoples devising a vain thing, and verse 4 says, "He who sits in the heavens laughs, the Lord scoffs at them." And that's such a telling verse, isn't it? Because it goes back to who is in control. No matter how much the nations rage, and we see a lot of rage all around us, we know as Christ's disciples that the Lord will return and that the Lord will have the final word. And that can comfort us in the midst of these days.
It does comfort me greatly. And, you know, we get a lot of scoffing, those of us who believe that Christ is coming back, even within the so-called church.
Right.
A lot of people who are amillennialists who believe that Christ will, this church will just make the world better and better, and one day Christ will return to a more or less pristine earth again. Just absolute nonsense. We get scoffed at for that.
Yeah.
But we see all of these things developing just as God's prophetic word says it was. These things are not to, it would, these prophetic truths are not to be spiritualized or allegorized, such as some of the Reformed churches would have it, to say that all these things in the Book of Revelation is merely allegory or it's symbolism. We see these things developing. We see these situations developing. We see, for example, the prophet Ezekiel in chapters 38 and 39 talking about a coalition of nations that would one day attack Israel, the
yes.
mountains of Israel, and they will attack from the north of Israel, of the regathered Israel. And So what do we see? They talked about Rosh, which is Russia, talked about Ezekiel talked about Togarmah, which is Turkey, talked about Persia, which is modern-day Iran. Those three are coming together as never before in a coalition, exactly as God's Word says. So whereas I don't think we see prophecy actually being fulfilled at this time, unless you want to consider Israel being back in the land, that is a prophecy fulfilled.
Yes.
But it's not being actually fulfilled, but it is definitely a stage setting for fulfillment.
Well, right. Well, one of the things that you say in the book, which I thought was very interesting, was you talked about one of the signs is a coming economic boom. We always think about things falling apart before Jesus comes. What are you talking about there, and particularly in reference to Luke 17?
Well, I tell you, that's another one. I wish I had all day with you. If you go to raptureready.com, the people who listen, and look up my article there, on the coming boom, not bust. It's in this latest book. I went ahead and put the chapter on raptureready.com. And I believe that this President Donald Trump, who is a great builder, an economic builder, a genius, I think, in the area of economics, I think he's already proven that. Everybody for years now has been saying, well, we're really going to have with the debt bubble and everything, we're going to have a tremendous economic bust. And we're going to have to go back to the Dark Ages practically and, live like paupers. And I've said since October of, I think I wrote a series of articles in October of 2010 that I didn't think so. Based upon Jesus' days of Noah, days of Lot prophecy, as it was in days of Noah, as it was in days of Lot, found in both Matthew 24, verses 36 through 42, and then again in Luke 17, verses 26 through 30, basically. And Jesus said that at the time he next intervenes catastrophically, in other words, he is revealed to mankind again, people will be building, buying, selling, they'll be planting, they'll be doing all these things, and I believe he was talking about not just in a general way, but in an accelerated way. I believe he meant that he would be that this would be a time of boom economically. Now, that doesn't mean that this is a good time, because certainly the whole world is so debauched and turning away from God that it's getting worse and worse. But as far as economics are concerned, Jesus talked about this time, and he wasn't talking about the second advent. He couldn't have been talking about that second advent, because in Revelation chapter 19, verse 11, at that time when he comes back, there will probably not be, three-fourths of the world's population will have probably been destroyed by that time. People will be in the rocks, begging the rocks to fall on them, and as they still curse God and shake their fists at him. And so it's not a time of a great economy spoken of at the time of his coming back at Armageddon to put an end to all this judgment. He was talking here about a time that he's going to intervene, and it comes right after that fig tree reference you made earlier. And he says it's going to be at a time you think not. He goes on to say that, and that only the Father knows that time. Well, that can't be the time of Armageddon, because that can be calculated from the midpoint of the tribulation era. So Jesus is talking about a great economic time. We're seeing a great economic boom right now, and it's promised to get a lot more in the direction of a boom as time goes on, and I believe we're going to see that. And I'm just praying that, I'm not setting dates, but I'm praying that in the middle of this economic boom, not bust, the Lord's going to indeed intervene.
Yes.
The rapture's what
yes,
I hope.
Yes. Well, and another thing that you mentioned, which drew my attention, was when we read the Olivet Discourse, and people will know this verse, the Lord saying about the end times, for nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, that the word nation there actually refers to ethnic groups. So this is interesting. So is Jesus saying there will be times of ethnic uprising near the end?
Well, I think definitely, yeah. And I don't think it's going to be really great during the tribulation era itself. But there again, I think we see stage setting for this right now. And some people would say, particularly during the Obama administration, we had so many ethnic strife, much ethnic strife in this nation.
We did.
And, of course, we see it all across the world. and is growing. And so, again, Jesus' words are true, as they always will be.
They always will be. Well, when we talk about Babylon, that's always an interesting question, whether or not Revelation 18 is talking about a particular country that is around right now, or, you know, the fall of Babylon, her riches destroyed in 1 hour. This is a very scary passage in many ways. But you do make the case that America is Babylon's mirror image, perhaps could be considered to be Babylon. But what are the similarities that you see between Babylon and Revelation 18 and the United States?
The main thing I see is this. There's no nation. This is the apex nation of absolute of all history. There has never been a nation that has achieved the kinds of things this nation has achieved. You know, from the standpoint of production, so far as bringing the world into a more modern state, no other nation has done that. America is definitely the apex nation, the richest nation that's ever been on the planet, despite all the things that the aspersions that are cast upon it. Now, I believe that it's a mirror image of the mystery Babylon, the Babylon that will be destroyed in chapter 18 of Revelation, in that it has literally affected it's a kings have fornicated with her and all this, meaning economically.
Right.
And so every nation in the world is drastically affected by the United States. I mean, even Russia, China, all of them.
Right.
Saudi Arabia, all of them are drastically affected by the American dollar. And no other nation has had that kind of influence. And, of course, it's a nation that happens to be a friend of Israel at the moment. I think that will end at some point, probably, but the fact is that America has had all this influence all over the world. Now, I'm not saying it is the Babylon spoken of, but I can tell you this much: I don't see how this Babylon that's talked about here could be developed in, say, Iraq, where it was originally on the plains of Shinar, and come to, it could be built, the city itself could be built as Dubai was very shortly, but the kind of influence that's talked about this country, how it's influenced the entire world with its great production and so forth, so that the merchants of the earth in their ships far off lament and mourn its loss, that would take years and decades to develop that kind of influence. And America already has that kind of influence, has had for a long time. So that's where I think the similarities between these two entities called America and Babylon, end time Babylon, can be found.
Right. So then would you regard the presidency of Donald Trump as a reprieve, a temporary thing? There are many Christians who think so, that this is just the Titanic bobbing in the water. What's your opinion on that?
I believe it's temporary. The rapture is going to so disrupt the whole world that I think it will be changed. The dynamics will be entirely different. America has a large percentage of Christians in it, even though not as many as a lot of people think, maybe. But it's going when the Christians are taken home to be with Christ, this is going to cause tremendous changes. There's going to be some relationships developed between Europe and America, and I think Europe will become a much more powerful entity at the time, but we'll still have America's tremendous firepower and so forth to call its own. And I think Antichrist will be able to build his base partly from what's left from America's military and so forth.
Wow.
These are just my thoughts, you know. I that's the way I see it.
Sure. No, it's all in the book, and it's really interesting. It's called Essays in Apocalypse. Terry James with us, and you can check him out at raptureready.com. Terry, just wonderful to have you with us again. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Janet. Appreciate it.
All right. God bless you. And we'll be back on Janet Mefford Today. This Janet Meffer Today podcast is brought to you by Preborn. We're wanting to save 250 preborn babies this January by offering free ultrasounds to women in crisis pregnancies. You can help by calling 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229 or janetmefford.com. Welcome back to Janet Meffer Today. Well, the focus this month is on human life, and it's important to remember that life is not just under attack at the beginning of life, but also at the end. Case in point, the assisted suicide lobby has now instituted a new direction in its quest to end human life in Delaware, and that is by trying to redefine assisted suicide as palliative care. And this is just one of several radical pieces of assisted suicide legislation pending in several states. We're going to get the latest now from Alex Schadenberg, Executive Director of the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition. Alex, it's so good to talk to you again. How are you?
It's great. It's always good to be on your show.
Thank you. Well, tell us a little bit about this Delaware bill. What do we need to know here, and where do things stand with this bill? What's going on?
Okay, so first of all, the issue of assisted suicide is being redefined as palliative care is not a new idea, but Delaware is actually trying to institute it. So this has been something that the assisted suicide lobby has been talking about for a while. And if you actually ever read any of their letters and their, you know, their letters to their members, they use the same language as palliative care. They refer to assisted suicide as treatment, as an end-of-life option, palliative care, caring, compassion. They use all the same language. Palliative care, though, is defined by the World Health Organization as neither intending to hasten or postpone death. So it's not a is not in any way designed in its inception to have anything to do with assisted suicide, but the assisted suicide lobby is trying to change that.
Right. So Delaware is taking this designation and running with it. Why are they doing that? What are they all putting into this bill?
Well, this bill in particular is somewhat similar to most other bills, the one in Delaware. The issue of redefining assisted suicide as palliative care, I think, is part of the assisted suicide game plan. Once you've done that, then, for instance, funding for palliative care, which occurs in the U.S., and there's a bill right now federally to increase funding for palliative care and palliative care training. So funding for palliative care then could be then allotted then to assisted suicide. It would also then create a problem for palliative care organizations who are being pressured to be involved in assisted suicide. But this bill also redefines physicians have to be involved in assisted suicide. So what this bill does is it says that a physician doesn't have to do assisted suicide, but the physician has to refer. So having to refer means that you're actually forced to be complicit in the act, because it's not neutral. It is, you must refer. So if you have a patient who asks for assisted suicide and you believe that prescribing lethal drugs to your patients is absolutely wrong, it's against the Hippocratic Oath, you never went into medicine to kill patients, but to care for patients, this bill in Delaware would force you to have to refer.
Oh, good grief. Why is it that they feel the need to force physicians against their will to refer people for assisted suicide? Why can't they just give those people an exemption? Not that the law should ever be in place in the first place, but what is their reason for refusing to let physicians opt out?
Well, the reality is that they have a problem in most states that very few physicians want to participate. You might remember that, sadly, in 2016, assisted suicide was passed in D.C., and as you know, D.C. is not a state. D.C. is like a territory. Nonetheless, it was passed in D.C., and it's a very small legislature. And in the first year, when the first year report came out, no assisted suicides had occurred in D.C., and only two doctors had said that they're willing to participate. Now, D.C. is quite small, so you could see how that could come out that way. But there's very few physicians willing to participate. So by forcing referral, that ends the problem of the issue of who will participate. It enables then, sadly, a few physicians to become, how would you say, like the assisted suicide doctors. And it doesn't take many of them to do a lot of deaths.
No, it wouldn't, but it's sort of interesting because if you are shoving these bills through in locations like Washington, D.C., but in that case you only have two physicians who want to go along with it, isn't that an indication to the lawmakers that maybe they shouldn't be passing these bills in the first place and they ought to be listening to more of the physicians who are supposed to be ideally upholding the Hippocratic Oath? Why don't they give more consideration to the physician's position on this rather than the pure politics of, you know, the Hemlock Society turned compassion and choices?
Well, everything you're saying is absolutely correct. But as you know, they're politically motivated. The morals, the culture, the attitude towards killing, as you know, has shifted, and they want to be avant-garde with this, whatever that means. So the fact is that it's really politically motivated. You know, if you consider D.C., D.C. has a very large minority population, and we notice in other states, such as Oregon, which has had assisted suicide, sadly, for 20 years, very sad, when it is that there's almost nobody of, like there's been, like only one or two assisted suicides in minority populations. It tends to be, you know, white, educated people who want assisted suicide, people who are, I guess you could call them the affluent in that sense. But the biggest thing that we have to talk about assisted suicide is what it actually is, because people want to think of it as, oh, it's my body, my choice, it's my autonomy, and it's not about that at all. When you look at the law is written to give the physician the right in law to be able to cause your death. That's what it's about. So what it is about is giving somebody else the right in law to prescribe lethal drugs to give you suicide by doctor rather than suicide in another manner. That's what the law does. Right. And it's very crazy if you think about it, because what you're saying is we're going to trust someone with our lives. That, to me, is a very concerning concept.
It is. Well, I know there's also another bill that's been filed in Oregon that's trying to go even farther right on the issue of the definition of terminal illness.
Right. So what's happening in Oregon is they've decided there's two bills, actually, in Oregon, and they're both trying to change the definitions of the Oregon law. And what happened, just so you know, was on January 1st, the letter that came out from the Hemlock Society, now known as Compassion and Choices, it said that what they need to do is they need to expand the assisted suicide law in Oregon. They were saying after 20 years, it's time to expand the law. And so when we actually see the bills, you see that's exactly what they're doing. They're redefining self-administer, they're redefining terminal illness, so it wouldn't be based on a six-month definition, prognosis definition, which had, you know, massive holes in it anyway, like the holes in the six-month definition were so wide that you could drive a hearse through them. Mm. But now they're going to remove that, and they're trying to, you know, increase eligibility. The other thing about it is they're removing the waiting period. So right now there's a 15-day waiting period, which, you know, I think assisted suicide is just a crazy idea from the beginning. But nonetheless, at least the 15-day waiting period supposedly is there to ensure that people actually will not change their mind, that they weren't just a depressed person. That will be removed, too, from the Oregon laws. So, and they've redefined who can do it, so therefore a physician assistant can do it, et cetera. So these are big big issues. Now, last year, they also tried to expand the suicide law in Oregon, and they failed. They tried to expand it to a 12-month definition. These are more surreptitious, these bills, how they're written. So they define it as how they're cleaning up the act, where, in fact, what they're doing is they're expanding assisted suicide. And, of course, New Mexico is the worst bill of all.
Yes.
The New Mexico bill, I've never seen anything like this. And I don't know if this is just, a legislator gone wild or the assisted suicide lobby deciding we're going to try and get something in New Mexico to change the landscape completely. But this bill is very, very wide open. Nurses can do it. Health assistants can do it. It allows it for depressed people. It removes conscience rights. It does many, many things, as well as redefining what it means to be terminal to a definition that has no meaning at all.
Unbelievable. And you
and of
also
course, it says may self-administer, not self-administer. So may self-administer means that if it was euthanasia, but you had the drugs, so it's not like you didn't get the drugs in the first place. But if it were euthanasia, meaning I did it to you rather than you did it to yourself, this bill would cover that because they defined that as assisted suicide.
Incredible. Well, thank you so much. Alex Shadenberg, Executive Director of the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition. You can check them out at epcc.ca. Thank you so much, Alex, for being here. This hour of Janet Mefford Today is brought to you by Sky Pass Entertainment's The Least of These, The Graham Stain Story, rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13, in theaters February 1st. More information is available at theleastofthese.movie. We'll be right back on Janet Mefford Today. Genesis 1 tells us God created man in his image. Male and female, he created them. The Bible is clear that human life is God-given and valuable. But as we know, not everybody in our country believes that. It's why more than 1 million preborn babies are killed in the womb every year because of the scourge of abortion. During the Sanctity of Human Life Month, would you help us save human lives? We're partnering with the Ministry Preborn this month to try to save 250 preborn babies, and in a very direct and important way. Preborn funds crisis pregnancy centers across America so they can offer free ultrasounds to women in crisis pregnancies. Ultrasound is a game changer because when abortion-minded women actually see their babies in their wombs, 80% of the time they choose life. It's one of the best ways to stop abortion. Even better, through the work of Preborn, these women hear the gospel of Jesus Christ, and thousands of them have come to know the Lord. It's a great ministry, but we really need your help. Right now, we've received enough support from Janet Mefford Today listeners to save 125 babies, but that's only half the number of babies we want to save. It only takes a gift of $28 to provide one ultrasound for one woman who's about to get an abortion. For a gift of $140, you can provide five free ultrasounds to women in crisis pregnancies. And let me tell you, every gift helps. To donate, please call now, 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229. Or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. During the Sanctity of Human Life Month, let's do more than complain about abortion. Let's stop it in its tracks and reach these moms, not only with the message of life, but with the gospel of Jesus. Please help and call now, 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229. Or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Call 855-402-BABY. Thank you. Welcome back to Janet Mefford Today. This is so funny. I absolutely cracked up when I saw this. I don't know if you've seen this, but this is really worth listening to. California lost its mind quite a while ago when it comes to LGBT activism. The radical stuff that's going on in that state is really shameful. And, you know, this is the problem when you have all these people voting in nonstop liberals. This is what you're going to get. They're just going to keep pushing the envelope and pushing the envelope and pushing the envelope. Now we're at the psych ward stage. That's my personal opinion. We are rock solid insane now in California. At least these lawmakers are. Did you hear about this state senator, Hannah Beth Jackson? She's a Democrat from Santa Barbara. She's also the chairman. See, I gotta edit this as I'm reading this because they call her the chair. What? She's got a back and four legs and people sit on her. No, she's not a chair. She's a chairman. I hate the word chairwoman. I can't stand it. So she's a chairman. Anyway, she heads up the Senate Judiciary Committee in the Senate there in California. And she made a very important announcement just a few days ago involving new committee rules. There at the Senate Judiciary Committee. Listen to cut one.
Our first order of business is to approve the committee rules. I'd like to note in respecting the fact that we are now a state recognizing the non-binary designation as a gender, he and she, we are now merging them so that we are using what my grammar teacher would have had a heart attack over. We are using the phrase they and replacing other designations so that it's a gender-neutral designation of they, and we've done that through most of the, basically that's the primary reforms and revisions to the committee rules. So, and I appreciated Senator Mawning observing that the chair is she, but in the spirit of gender neutrality for the rules of this committee, it now designates the chair as they. So the world is a different place. My grammar teacher is long gone, and I won't be hearing from her. And if any of you...
From them.
From them, exactly. From they. But for any of you who may hear from an old grammar teacher, blame it on me.
Oh, my goodness. See what I mean? They need a rubber room. They need some straitjackets. Haul this woman away. Haul all the people who support her away. I'm joking, of course, only slightly. She wants to merge the pronouns. We're not going to have she anymore. We're not going to have he anymore. Everybody's going to be known as they. And right after she announces it, she uses the word she to describe her grammar teacher and has to be corrected there and saying, I won't be hearing from her. No, it's they. It's them. And then she says, okay, it's them. I mean, they. Okay, they is grammatically incorrect because it's a direct object. So clearly you didn't pay attention in grammar class, nor do you respect the rules of English grammar. What is wrong with you? People have lost their minds. They have lost the ability to think anymore or to say no anymore to increasing levels of insanity and demands from the radical big gay agenda. Where is it going to stop? Do people really want to be referred to as they? They. I talked to them and they said, it's awful. That is a pronoun that is to be designated for a plural number of people. And you have he and she as male and female individual pronouns, and it's staying that way. We're not changing the English language for these insane people. That's it. And we just need to put our thoughts right out there, plain as day, and tell them we're not going to talk like that. No. And by the way, your grammar teacher is spinning in her grave right now because that is just so awful. I can't even imagine what is going through the mind of somebody who says that and isn't joking. This is California now. Now, listen to this woman move on to the subject of abortion and begin to break her own rules over and over and over again. This is cut to.
Well, we should, as it is rooted in our nation's constitution that a woman has a right to control her own body and make her own choices. And in consultation with her family or her doctor or with whomever she chooses. And I remember my parents saying, what possible right is it of the government to tell a woman what she should do with her body? To use Martin Luther King as your reference, I think besmirches his good reputation and the things that he stood for, which were equality and justice for all. We also need to thank, by the way, our lead committee assistant for her service to the Senate and this committee over the last several years. She's not with us today, but I want to also give her a shout out. This, again, with all the bills we hear, this is Verwin, so I wanted to thank her as well. Jocelyn, best of luck to you as well.
I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to place a call to the non-binary police, and they will immediately come and arrest you and haul you off to a gender-neutral jail. Because I just listened to all of those violations of the committee rules. 8 times she said the word her. 2 times she said the word she. 1 time she said the word his. 1 time she said the word he. And I am offended. You got to stop doing that. I am not happy with Hannah Beth Jackson. I mean, it's ridiculous. And do you like how she talked about the fact that a woman has a right to abortion and a woman's body? And there are no more women. What are you talking about? You can't talk about a woman's right to abortion. You're going to have to make it they, a man or a woman's right to an abortion, because it's just not equal to say that men can't get pregnant and that men can't have babies and that men can't have abortions. Good grief. I mean, I've never heard such sexism in my whole life. This is crazy. You know, just level the playing field. There are no men, there are no women, and there are no pronouns anymore except the pronoun they or them. Now, how you would tell the difference between a plural designation on many people and a singular. You can't tell anymore because they're using the same word allegedly to describe everybody, no matter how many people there are. This is just, it's laughable. It's hilarious to listen to it. But on the other hand, it's maddening because these people are serious. And this is on a spiritual level what we really need to really need to dig down on this whole thing and look at it from a spiritual biblical perspective. This is what's going on. When they're attacking the binary, they're attacking the image and likeness of God. That's what it is. You have to look, who are they attacking? Are they attacking women? Are they attacking men? No, they're attacking God. Because who was created in the image of God? Not trees, not turtles, human beings, male and female. He created the male. Then he said it's not good for a man to be alone. And he created the woman out of the man. There you go. Be fruitful and multiply. Created marriage. Have babies. Create families. Populate the world. Have dominion over the world. There are no other creatures besides male and female who have the designation of bearing the image of God. So of course it's an attack on the image of God. But I don't know how you get out of this ridiculous notion that women have a right to this, that, or the other thing if we live in a gender-neutral world. Because as she said, the world has changed. The world has changed. So all of a sudden, male and female have disappeared. We'll see how long this lasts. We'll see how long they could actually stay consistent with all of this. But they're going somewhere I'm not going. And if the people of California really know what's good for them, they'll throw these bums out and elect people with common sense and sanity. Enough is enough. Even if you're a diehard progressive, aren't you looking at this with sheer embarrassment and saying, that's just dumb. Come on, just stop already. It's insane. Well, anyway, we want to say thank you to each and every one of you, speaking of abortion, who have been standing with us during the Sanctity of Human Life Month. Want to let you know we are halfway toward our goal of saving 250 preborn babies during this January. And we need more help. We really do. Preborn does a fantastic job. They have counseled 340,000 women who are considering abortion at these crisis pregnancy centers that Preborn works with. 73,600 babies have been saved, and more than 28,000 moms have surrendered their lives to Jesus Christ. All it takes is a gift of $28 to provide one woman seeking an abortion with a free ultrasound, giving that mom the opportunity to choose life for her baby. And a gift of $140 will provide 5 free ultrasound sessions, reaching 5 women with the message of life. So perhaps you can sponsor one ultrasound or 5 or 10. Our goal again is to help 250 preborn babies make it out into the world the way God designed. 855-402-BABY. That's the number to call. 855-402-2229. 855-402-BABY. If you can call that and you can donate today, we'll be that much closer to saving more lives. There's also a banner to click at janetmefford.com. We really appreciate your support more than we can say. Thank you so much for your generosity. We got to go. Thanks a lot for being with us here on Janet Mefford today, and we'll see you next time. God bless.